Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me today is my co-host,
Chad Mitz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. So, Chad, how do you feel about the fact that we now live in a world where Suicide Squad, after 36 days at the domestic box office, is within $25 million of the total domestic comb through 36 days of Dawn of Justice?
I never thought of that. See, you want to bring me onto this dark side of DC, whereas I've been thinking
we will get to the good side of DC. The Savior has spoken and has commissioned many changes,
which we knew were coming,
and attempted to restore the faith.
When I hear Suicide Squad numbers, I don't go immediately to Dawn of Justice. I go to X-Men because, you know, I don't like the X-Men. So
they're swimming in a pool of toilet water right now.
Yeah.
Basically because Apocalypse did not meet expectations.
Which people like more than Suicide Squad. Suicide Squad's kicking its ass. So I appreciate that more just because.
See, I did not hear a positive thing about Apocalypse. It was really met with, like, Singer hasn't moved out of the year 2000.
Yeah, but most people, it was kind of the same reception as Suicide Squad. But if you go to Rotten Tomatoes, X-Men is at like a 40-something, and Suicide Squad is like a 20-something. And I'm like, those moves are a whole lot closer than people want to admit. I had more fun with Suicide Squad. I didn't fall asleep on Suicide Squad, so that automatically gives it a bump, X-Men.
You did fall asleep.
Yeah, there was a point. So, I don't know what the break-even point for Suicide Squad is, because people keep saying a bunch of different stuff, but
I'm just going to go at this point and say 800 million worldwide. 750 to 800 million worldwide that breaks you even, may not actually turn a profit, but you can make your money elsewhere on merchandising and stuff.
Yeah, so I think when it opened, I didn't think it was going to make it this far. So I think this has to be a win for WB.
Well, I think some of this, at this point, I'm starting to believe that some of this is strictly anti-establishment hatred. Like, okay, all of these guys say that it sucks, so let's get behind it and push it. And, you know, we've got op-eds being written on the internet now about how Marvel gets a pass and DC gets all the hate, and how, you know, people have to wake up and realize that Marvel really isn't always awesome. And, like, this us versus the system. The system's wrong. The rating system's wrong. Rotten Tomatoes needs to be boycotted because their system sucks. And I feel that that's kind of, now, Suicide Squad has been embraced as an emblematic symbol of this oppressive regime overthrow.
It's one thing to have internet outrage on Twitter and stuff, because you can sit at your computer and do that. For me to think that these same people are going to actually get up and spend more of their money just to support it, I don't completely put it out of the realm, but it's like, y'all ain't, I don't have enough faith in them to do kind of that kind of stuff. I don't think they'll actually do it. But, I mean, I attribute it more to the fact that it's like the last big summer movie, bad with all of its flaws, is at least kind of fun. And there's nothing else that's been around it.
It's bright and colorful.
When they're in the sun. So the beginning and the end, the rest of it is like, it's in the darkness. And while the Enchantress does do her little dance in like this bright place, but it's still, overall, it's still fun. I think people still like the characters, and it just kind of fell in the right place to make money.
Yes, that's what happens in August, because August and September tend to be wastelands.
Really, like, I don't understand why half of these movies that came out didn't come out. Like, two of those movies could have came out at the end of August and cleaned up, but they were in May and they sucked. Even X-Men, that was god-awful, could have made money in September.
Nice guys could have made more money.
Yeah, I still need to see that. I've been trying to see it, but yeah, like right now would have been great for Nice Guys.
So let's move on and talk about some Fox news, some X-Men news that we all saw coming after the stinger that was attached to Apocalypse. What are your thoughts on Mr. Sinister being added to Wolverine 3?
Honestly, I didn't think it was going to be for Wolverine 3. I thought it was going to be Singer prepping for his next X-Men movie. It makes more sense.
But see, X-Men in Space is his next X-Men movie.
nothing needs to be his next X-Men movie. I just don't like X-Men in space, but I think that you can, especially for movies, you can get more bang for your buck with them on Earth with the whole mutant thing, difference, and all that stuff. That should resonate right now. But, yeah, as far as Sinister, I mean, it's fine, I guess, but then you consider their other two Wolverine movies and what they turned out to be. Why should I expect anything good from Sinister in this one? And considering this movie has wrapped, and now he's saying that we have Sinister, but we have no idea who Sinister is. And as I say that, I'm thinking about, like, we don't really know much about this movie, and nobody really has tried to find anything out, which means nobody really cares.
Except that it's Hugh Jackman's one last stand.
And that's it. That's the only reason people care about this movie.
Indeed. But that's the whole point. Like, if it weren't for Hugh Jackman, this movie would not have been made. If it weren't for Hugh Jackman, the other James Mangold Wolverine movie, The Wolverine, would not have been made.
This is true.
So, like, you know.
I don't know. I have, like, no faith in this movie.
And I still haven't heard whether or not they brought Sabretooth back. I know Levi was talking about that at one point.
Exactly. We know nothing. We know Hugh Jackman's in it as Wolverine. He's old, and he's with Professor X. That's about the extent of what we know in this movie.
And it's coming out next July.
Is it July? I thought it was March.
Oh, yes, March. March 2017.
Which, we know hide no hair about this thing, and it's like, what, 9 months away? Mm-hmm. Y'all might want to get on that.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it moves, because February and March of 2017 are pretty crowded with tentpole pictures, so.
Yeah, I wouldn't move it, but, you know, when has Fox been smart?
This is true. Well, I mean, at least Bryan Singer has moved on to 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, so.
Let him stay there.
Yeah, so once he's done with that, he'll come back to play in the X-Men sandbox. Till then, they will try to get Ryan Reynolds and Deadpool 2 going as quickly as humanly possible.
If I'm anywhere near the head of Fox, I'm like, the movie we didn't believe in, we gave maybe $70 million, made $700 plus.
Made Ryan Reynolds have to pay for writers on stage.
Yeah, that movie made us all this money. This big, gigantic franchise movie, X-Men, that's been running, the longest running current crop of superhero movies that we have, has been running for 16 years. And it is not the highest grossing one. This low one we don't care about did this. And oh, by the way, a movie that from another studio that's a comic book property that people hated just trounced us. And we're going to still stick with the same core people that brought us this? Or how about we try something different, like, oh, let's put the X-Men on the shelf.
Well, you know that Ken Berg's like taking credit for Deadpool.
I do know that, and every time I see that, I'm like, I know your name's on it only because there's a mutant in this, and you didn't do next to anything. You might have been on set a few times, but those dudes, they've been working on it for 6 years, ain't nobody else want it. Stay away from it. Like, you can do Star Wars stuff right. The rest of it, not so much.
So let's move on from Fox's X-Men universe to the DC Expanded Universe. A fair bit of news on the DCEU this week. Let's start with the reveal that Joe Manganiello, you want to pronounce that last name for me?
I think it's Manganiello.
Joe Manganiello, who is a piece of Manganiello in most things that he's in, including Magic Mike and How I Met Your Mother, is going to play Deathstroke.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on Deathstroke and what that does to our preconceived notion that Ben Affleck's standalone Batman movie would basically be Arkham Asylum.
Well, first, Joe, I know all these other people have ideas of Joe from there's True Blood and Magic Mike. He will and always will be the first Flash Thompson to me. And mm-hmm. I just saw that movie again. So every time I see him, I'm like, you were like, have that size.
See, he's actually my pick for the Brutus the Beefcake biopic.
I can see that. But he's got to be taller than Brutus.
Probably.
He's like 6'6", which is part of the reason why I really like this casting, because Ben Affleck's a legit 6'5", and this dude's a big 6'6", and they're going to be beating the hell out of each other. So the visual of that, visually, this all works. As far as what we thought we knew about the solo Batman film with him being stuck in Arkham, I mean, you could still do that. It's just, Deathstroke's like the Endgame, and he might face him a few times in there, and you just sprinkle everybody else in the asylum throughout that. It just means that if we're having that, it just means that there's no, Affleck's not taking that suit off the whole movie. This is just straight, pure straight Batman, which I think it'll be fine. It's just like, we've never had like a superhero movie. It's like, forget the rest of this, the suit. He's in it, that's it. This is one day in the suit from start to finish. He's just Batman. I think people will like it, but it's going to be different.
But then again, we don't know. All we know is that Affleck and Johns have been sitting in a room somewhere pretty much since he was on the set of Dawn of Justice trying to hammer this thing out. And so there are all kinds of rumors and speculation, but we don't know. I don't think the movie's even officially been dated, except to say that I think they're shooting for 2018, I want to say, or 19.
I think with all the news we just kind of got with the thing Affleck teased last week, and John's confirming that Deathstroke's in the movie and Manganiello's cast, I really think it will be the 2018 release, which I think is in October. But yeah, they haven't officially dated it yet, but I think we're really close now.
Well, I mean, it's just interesting to see that the guy who's out promoting Live by Night and, like, preparing to make another huge Oscar run in a landscape that, as of this moment right now, after Telluride in Toronto, seems to be devoid of big-name directors. He seems, with a January release, to be in prime position to make another run at this. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if they placed it in this year's Oscar race or next year's Oscar race, but if it's this year's Oscar race, he's in fine position, because none of the outstanding films that are really being considered, A Monster's Call, some of these other, Birth of a Nation, The Founder, none of these other...
I forgot about The Founder, yeah.
Yeah, none of these other big-name... Sully, none of these have really locked in directors. Eastwood will get a nomination just because Empty Chair. But, I mean, if you gave the man a nomination for Fake Baby, you're going to give him a nomination
for Sully?
For the plane landing in the Hudson set piece. Cause,
you would think.
But, like, it's interesting that he pushed Live by Night back a couple of times to do Gone Girl and Dawn of Justice. Finally got it done. Finally going to go on the press tour and the reward circuit for that. And then, you know, he's in the middle of doing Justice League. They're not shooting them back to back. They're just shooting them one at a time. Mm-hmm. He's made cameos in Suicide Squad. Probably will make another cameo somewhere else. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up in the last 5 or 10 minutes of the Wonder Woman movie. Just to literally set everything up for Justice League. Which is that following November. It's mm-hmm. a June and then a November. But it's just interesting to see this guy who, Argo, The Town, Live by Night, Gone Girl, that guy doing Batman.
Which is why everybody's excited for it, because it's that guy being Batman. And most people actually like his Batman outside of, you know, the murder, death, kill stuff. But so that's what makes this all intriguing. And I don't. Maybe they'll wait till after the after Live by Night comes out, then they'll announce the date of the Batman. Because the minute they do, if they announce it between now and then, the minute they do it, while he's on the press tour for Live by Night, they're gonna be like, "So, Batman?" And they're already gonna do it now because he is Batman. He's gonna be in Justice League.
We're already talking about a Man of Steel 2 that came out of nowhere, out of cryostasis.
Well, yeah. That makes it even worse, because now he's not only going to get the Batman questions, but he's going to get the questions about all of this during this Live by Night thing, which So
if it's this Oscar season, maybe next Oscar season.
I think the way they're trying to set it up is they're going to do like American Sniper did.
Like American Sniper or like the Revenant did. A wide release in January, an early release in December.
Yeah, I think that's the way it's going to go.
Which some of those are tied to Oscar rules where you have to have a certain theater count, yada, yada.
Yeah, you have to... I know it has to be in New York and L.A., before January. I just don't know how many theaters.
Yeah. So let's move on to another DC property that is upcoming. The Flash movie with Lord and Miller attached. No, it's not. Lord and Miller helped.
Yeah.
They helped formulate the script idea. It's gone through two directors now. And we're setting up for a 2018 release. So your thoughts on the casting for Henry Allen?
The choice seems to be Billy, I think it's Crudup is his name.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him in much, but the thing that I have seen him in is what most people listening to this will know. He was the big blue guy in Watchmen. He was Dr. Manhattan. I wish I had more stuff to go off of, but I mean, he seems to be a good actor. Everybody else is excited that he's up for this role.
I thought maybe he was in Boardwalk Empire, I thought.
See, I've never seen Boardwalk. He probably is. Yeah. I've just never seen it. So I'm literally only basing him off of Dr. Manhattan. And from what I remember of Watchmen, he was fine. And I think he'd be fine. He's...
as fine as the dude was playing Jar Jar Binks. I mean, it's all a computer-generated thing. So it's very hard. It's not like... Not like motion capture, where you're actually giving a performance and having that performance emitted through CGI. This is just a CGI creature that was created, and he basically...
I thought he did motion capture for it.
I thought it was just voiceover.
No, I think he did motion capture for it, because I know it's his face. Like, the whole thing is his face, and I think they shot his face to do stuff. So, I think it's motion capture. But this is like... If this motion cast should have been like, you know, Gollum from Lord of the Rings and then maybe one or two other things and then him and before the whole big boom of everybody doing motion capture.
Yeah. No one talking about the fact that there's a War of the Planet of the Apes film coming next summer.
I forgot. So I know lots of people did.
Apparently. I mean, Fox is not really doing a great job reminding people that there is a War for the Planet of the Apes movie coming.
Have they shot it?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it takes forever because you're doing...
In the post. And
you're doing the... you're doing... Motion capture, pretty much. Especially in a war movie where it's basically apes versus humans.
Yeah. I completely forgot. When did they shoot it? This summer?
Yeah. Well, actually, last spring, back in the spring.
Okay.
Before Jungle Book came out.
Jeez, man.
Yeah.
That completely just flew all over.
Well, I mean, it's in one of my most anticipated projects just simply because this trilogy, as it's conceived of, you know, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and War for the Planet of the Apes. It has honored the intent of the original. It has all the social commentary of the original and the performances, especially for as much crap as Toby Kibble gets for all the bad acting choices that he's taken.
He's got some bad ones.
His performance as Koba and the tragedy of the character that is Koba is a very interesting, you know, depiction, and his juxtaposition with Caesar is very interesting. And the fact that they did come back and say, yeah, he pushed him down that building, but Koba survives, and he will be back for War. He will be back for War for the Planet of the Apes. But what will be interesting to me about that film is an aged Caesar.
Yeah.
The last of the first generation of apes, and someone who at that point in his life will have seen his friends start to pass away,
mm-hmm.
and he will start to see a new generation led by his son start to come up, and how that transition happens. Mm-hmm. Because as we know, attitudes and philosophies and viewpoints change from one generation to the next. And in reality, the main overall theme of the first two movies is the perception of humanity and misperceiving certain things. Caesar misunderstanding what Franco's character was doing by putting him in the animal shelter. He felt abandoned and he felt left, not understanding why Franco did what he had to do. And that kind of fuels his initial thought about releasing the toxins and giving the apes the intelligence and going forth like that. And, you know, the next film is really about Koba's perception of humanity. Caesar allows Koba to push the black guy in the helicopter and let him fall off the side of the Golden Gate Bridge. Koba, Caesar did that as a, I watched what this man did to you. I know what man as a whole has done to you, because he's a lab monkey.
Yeah.
Caesar was not a lab monkey. Caesar was never afflicted in the same way that Koba was by man. And so Koba, he allows Koba to push that guy off the Golden Gate Bridge. And then that comes back to Rise of the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, where it's Koba saying, look, man, we haven't seen a human in like 3.5 years. We're not even sure that they're still around. Oh, wait, here they're coming. They're trying to work on our dam and trying to get their electricity back so they can survive in their little man city down there. And it comes down to two different philosophies. Caesar, who was never a lab ape, who has never been truly afflicted by man and has never really felt man's wrath except for his few moments in the animal shelter with Brian Cox, versus Koba, who sees all man as dangerous and all men as, well, they may tell you nice things, but as soon as they get a hold of a weapon, they will come and they will kill you.
Yeah.
So we need to arm ourselves, get our guns, and we need to go take them out. That little human city does not need to be there. And so they have basically a conflict of interest over the future of the ape civilization. Do we part allow humans to live and assist them to have some kind of meager life on Earth? Or do we just wipe them out and take the Earth over completely? And essentially, once Koba comes to the realization that Caesar's never going to come around to his side, he just basically performs a coup. And he overthrows Caesar and tries to kill him. Now, of course, Caesar survives and ultimately has this confrontation with Koba. But Koba starts the war with man. Because Koba kills Caesar, or tries to kill Caesar, then takes the apes by force down to the human city to try and wipe out the human civilization, and the human civilization cries out for help before Caesar can rectify things. And so the ships are coming. And so it's going to be interesting to see where in this timeline we end up, if we're going to have another 3-year jump or 5-year jump, how far into the war are we? Because it's just going to be really interesting to see, okay, you know, we've dealt with perception issues and misunderstandings and personal experiences of affecting judgment and affecting racial views. You know, where are we going to go in this war movie? Are we going to talk about, you know, making the choice between surviving and defending? Are we going to talk about, you know, how war starts and what starts wars and how man's hostility can lead to very bad things? What are we going to do? And that's going to be an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Now that I've gone on a rant about Planet of the Apes, which I was not intending to do. but why I don't understand why Fox is not like, hey, there's a Planet of the Apes movie coming out.
I don't know, but they haven't been doing a whole lot of good things with their marketing, except for Deadpool, which, once again, is kind of like its own thing.
That guy got paid.
Yes, he should have.
So, let's move on from The Flash. I mean, you like the casting. Yeah. I like the casting. I think it fits. I just don't really care about that movie yet, because I really haven't seen Ezra Miller's Flash yet, so I don't really know how to feel about an excitement level for a movie that hasn't started shooting yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's his reception has been good so far, but yeah, that, I mean, Justice League is going to be like the tail, but as with everything else WB has done so far, just Flash will already be in production by the time we see Justice League. However, you know, I'm hopeful because of things that have been said.
Because the Messiah has spoken.
Yes, the one, hopefully the one with the touch, has started talking about what's coming up for.
Because let's talk about the words that Johns has spoken from on high. The last time we heard anything really was the set visit that got released, where Deborah Snyder basically just said, "Well, the thing we learned from Dawn of Justice was people don't like their superheroes to be deconstructed." Mm-hmm. So, what does our good friend Mr. Johns have to say?
Well, before I say what he says,
as you bring down the word from on high,
the most interesting thing in the article, which was a New York Times article, was that it said, and I don't know how true this is. This could just be part of the spin, but they said that while Johns has worked on all these other movies before, it was pretty much only as a consultant with no real power. So saying that, if you take it as at face value, it's just like DC did all the stuff. They brought Johns in. Pretty much so fans would be like, oh, he's there, he's working on it, and it would kind of give them the leeway, and they didn't actually have to listen to him. Whereas now, he...
The George Lucas role. George's role now in the...
Oh, well, yeah. We'll show you all the stuff, George, but we don't really care what you say.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like that. But now, he's got the power, like, the veto power.
He got the power that he had on Green Lantern.
Oh, again, if you go by that, it's like he's consultant. And so, like,
from that set visit report. He led that set visit all the way around, baby.
I know. And which
he showed that concept art.
I want to know what happened so bad between what all the reporters saw, because every one of them that has spoken about that to this point has all been like, what they showed us, we thought this movie was going to be incredible. And what we got was not what we saw. So I want to know what happened between then and there, that it just all fell apart, because it fell apart. But Johns, he's pretty much said that, you know, the movies so far have been really dour and not filled with hope. And he says DC characters are the opposite of that. And that's what they want to get back to having the, you know, your hopeful characters and how they turn around. And I think he even went on to mention Batman and the things that he did in Batman vs. Superman that they're going to correct in Justice League, and they're going to actually actively explain it in Justice League why he has to turn around. So he's offering up all this stuff as in, this is the direction we went, but we're going a completely different one, and everybody knows we have to go this other way.
So Zach's just on that ship until he gets thrown overboard? They did this with Man of Steel, right? Man of Steel, people got all up in arms about that third act disaster porn and having Superman break Zod's neck in the subway station to save four people. Four people. You've murdered countless thousands, and you're worried about a little family family that couldn't afford to go to Disney World. They decided to go to Metropolis for their vacation.
Superman didn't murder anybody else in the fight. It was just a fight.
That destroyed buildings that people were in.
What? Again.
At what point did they say there was an evacuation? They said there was an evacuation in Dawn of Justice.
No. I kind of appreciate them not saying there was an evacuation, because if this really happened, people are going to die. That's just what Man of Steel showed you is actually what would happen.
Which is why Superman would take Zod out of the city and go have a fight somewhere where there is no people involved.
Again, okay, so here's my whole defense of this is, this is...
Defend a father who could not take his child to Disney World and took him to Metropolis on vacation.
I'm not going to defend him, because he should have ran when he had the chance, instead of just sitting there like, oh, wait, I'm going to stay on this corner. I'm going to stay in this corner. He's stupid. I'm not going to defend him. I will defend Superman in the fact that he's been Superman a day, and this is a guy that's never had a fight in his life. And now he's fought a whole bunch of people that can kill him. And in the middle of that fight, he actually realized, like, there's a point in that fight where he's got the upper hand on Zai because Zai can't do certain things. And then there's a point in the fight where Zai's like, no, I can do what you can do now. And at that point, Zai not only has his powers, but Zai knows how to fight and stuff. And if you've watched this Superman, I've watched these between this movie and Dawn of Justice, and I don't know if they do this on purpose, but Superman has a very brawler like fighting style, but his signature thing to do is to fly headfirst into people every time. And once he finds people that are like on his level or above, they take that and they whip his ass with it. And that's kind of what happens with Zod at first. And it's what happens with Doomsday, and that's how he eats the statue. All that to say, he can't really fight. He's just stronger than everybody. So I don't credit him with killing people in Metropolis. I do think the movie could have did a better job of showing that he cared about other people, because there's certain things he does. It's not like intentional, but if he doesn't do these things, it doesn't look as bad. But those are director choices and not necessarily.
But story, I mean, choices. Like the fans were up in arms. They created a firestorm, and so they were like, okay, the entirety of Dawn of Justice is going to correct this, and we'll explain and make Henry Cavill Superman answer to the people for what he did. And then he bowed his head and an explosion happened and he never really answered for what he did. So now people are up in arms about murder-suicide Batman, who was like flamethrower to Ma Kent's head, and so he like hits the gas tank and causes a massive explosion. Like, okay, so we're going to rectify that in Justice League and make him realize the cowardness of his ways and turn him into a whole and good Batman. Like, you can't keep kicking down the road. You can't keep answering for what happened in the last movie.
But so this all goes back to like my biggest thing with DC, well, pretty much not DC per se, but Warner Brothers. And this is like a fundamental, like, this is in the DNA of Warner Brothers dealing with DC Comics. They are highly reactionary to everything. Every Warner Brothers DC movie since the first Superman on down, with the exception of like three, has been a reaction to the one that came before it. Never has it been like, we have this plan, we're going to stick to it. Hopefully that's what they're doing now. But before, it's like, okay, Superman 2 is a reaction to Superman 1, only in the fact that the people producing it didn't like working with Donner, and their reaction is more about money, not more about the perception. But 3, 4 is a reaction of 3 being so silly and stupid, but they still need to make money, but they're broke. So
yeah, Quest for Peace is, yeah.
Yeah, if Quest for Peace was supposed to be, it was supposed to be this serious take on Superman and what can he can and cannot do, which is counter to the fighting robot ladies in Superman 3. Batman Forever is a reaction to Batman Returns, and that Warner Brothers lost their mind and let Tim Burton do whatever the hell he wanted, and you got Batman Returns. So they're like, bruh, we can't sell toys off of this. So
Big Win Toys are scaring the little children.
Yeah, it's like, what is this? Because you might not remember, but I know because I've had this. The Batman, so, you know, they have the toy line for Batman Returns. The Penguin does not look like the Penguin in the movie. He looks like the classic Burgess Meredith Penguin with the tuxedo and the hat and the top hat and all that stuff. There's nothing that looks like that Penguin. Why? Because kids don't want that crap. The closest thing to it is the animated version, which they had to retcon and make look like Tim Burton's version because the movie was coming out. He was going to look like that same version too, but Warner Brothers said, we're doing the movie and this is what the Penguin looks like, so make him look more like this. And as soon as that mandate was gone, they went, nope, and they brought him back to that. So Forever is a reaction to Returns. Batman and Robin is just a double down on Forever. It's like, we need toys.
No, yeah. Batman and Robin is, for as much crap as Schumacher takes at multiple Comic Cons and things over the years for what happened, he has a very eloquent defense of himself, which is, we were forced to turn around very, very quickly and make choices, especially like creating a new Batmobile and bringing in Batgirl, and make changes based on toys and marketing.
Yep.
Like, Warner's wanted to make a toy commercial, and so I had to make them a toy commercial.
Yeah, and this, yeah, that movie was, all the other ones had been 3 years apart, that one was two. And then they, yeah, they wanted to make toys, and that's what they got, the big toy commercial. Those toys were actually pretty good. That was the only good thing about that movie. So
Uma Thurman's Poison Ivy is actually okay.
It's okay. It's, she would have been good in another movie if they gave her different things to do, but in this movie...
Well, I mean, I think if with a Burton directing, like, she could have done as good of a job as Michelle Pfeiffer did as Selina Kyle.
I say that even though I don't like what Burton did in return, but Selina Kyle was, you know, outside of the magical nine lives thing, no, she's good. And then...
Well, I think that Burton did the Bruce Wayne-Selina Kyle relationship better than Nolan did.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. I mean, she's the best movie Catwoman we've got, so I can't knock that. I can knock a lot of things about Returns. I won't knock that.
The fact that it gave children nightmares in 1992?
Did it? It didn't give me nightmares, but I was like 11, so I was beyond that. But I can see that. I mean, the whole theme of the movie is, I'm going to take your kids to the sewer and kill them. So, yeah, I can understand that.
So other reactions.
So then you go to the Nolan trilogy is pretty much untouched because they kind of let him do what he wanted and he struck gold and that's that. But then you get to Green Lantern, which just well no, then you get to Superman Returns, which is Bryan Singer's love letter to
Donner,
to Donner, which nobody likes. So we get Green Lantern in between Superman Returns and Man of Steel. So Man of Steel is a reaction to both of those in the fact that most people don't like Superman Returns and they say he doesn't do anything. He just lifts stuff. So you got fights. Lots of them. And then Green Lantern was just what it was. So they're
campy.
Like, yeah, we can't do that. So again, it all leads into Man of Steel. So, and we know what Man of Steel, Batman vs. Superman is a direct reaction to Man of Steel. I mean, in the whole premise of the movie, it's a reaction to that damn movie. And then they just went, they just did dumb things. And we seen we seen what happened with Suicide Squad because of that. We're going to see what happens with Justice League because of that. The only one that might not be a reaction to all of this is Wonder Woman, because they might have already set that before all these other things started happening.
Screenplay credit to Geoff Johns and Zack Snyder.
I'm praying that it still says just story by... Story idea, Zack Snyder. Screenplay, Geoff Johns. I can live with that.
All right. So let's end the last bit of our DCEU news. No Booster Gold.
Oh, Booster Gold. Yes.
No Booster Gold in the DCEU. Does that, like, fit? Because, like, his tone's way different even than the Flash in terms of tone.
Yeah, Booster is normally played for comedy. I mean, from that aspect, I can see that, even though it's part of the fun of Booster, seeing him interact with everybody else.
Isn't that sort of similar to the character that is teased in the movie posters in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2?
Which one?
The set photos that we saw, the Firefly guys. Oh, what's his name? Heartthrob. A.B. Castle.
Oh, Fillion?
Yeah.
What was it? Oh,
Mr. Wonderful or whatever it was.
Oh, kinda. I can't remember
exactly. Kinda like what, Mysterio.
Kinda, but I mean, Booster's whole thing is that he's from the future and he comes back to the past solely to be a superhero and get glory. That's all he comes back for.
Yeah.
So you play him for comedy like that. If they do a Booster Gold and include Blue Beetle, who's also normally tagged with Booster Gold, then it makes it better because he has somebody to play off of. Blue Beetle is like, he's like Batman light. He's like what Batman would be if he didn't see his parents murdered but still wants to do good and had all his money, was like, and had fun. Mm-hmm. That's what Blue Beetle is.
So it makes sense that it's not included in this current continuity?
Yeah. I mean, it's another one of those things they could fix if they wanted to, but it'll be fine.
So let's move on to some Marvel news, kind of light on the Marvel news this week.
Yeah, they've been tight-lipped.
So your thoughts on the fact that we have photos out there with Shocker, because you know how Spider-Man fans love their movies with three villains.
Oh, man. Yes, yeah, Spider-Man fans are particularly, yeah, they are particularly the ones. They're like, wait, you got to stop it too, because once you cross that threshold, there's like no turning back. But
in Marvel, we trust.
Yeah. This is really testing that for them. Like, I thought it wouldn't be as big a deal, but they're like, a lot of them are like, I don't know. I know it's you, Marvel, but it's been too many times. But as far as the look of Shocker, it's like,
that's Shocker.
If you see it and you know who Shocker is, you're like, that's Shocker.
But I mean, you brought up a very brilliant point in that. Look at what they did in the beginning of Amazing Spider-Man 2 with Rhino. Rhino's only in the movie for that opening credit sequence. Uh-huh. And that opening credit sequence can happen because you've already established Spider-Man in the Amazing Spider-Man movie. So you are seeing him doing his day-to-day job. The same way with this iteration of Spider-Man from Tom Holland, already been set up in Civil War. The YouTube videos have set up that he has been doing his own thing for a little while. Mm-hmm. It's never really specified how long. I think Holland says it's like 3 months or something.
I think he said it's been 6 months since he got bit. So
right.
Yeah.
And so you have this pre-existing Spider-Man, so it would make sense that your opening credit sequence would be him shutting somebody down.
Yeah.
And Shocker would fit that description.
Yeah, The only thing that makes me think he'll be a little bit more than that is the actor that presumably is Shocker, which is Bokeem, I think it's Woodbine. We're just going to go with Woodbine. Because he's a little bit more known. People know who he is when they see him. But I still think it's just going to be like, he shows up, Spider-Man knocks him off and throws him in jail. Maybe they get a name like that because eventually they do want to do Sinister Six, and Shocker has been a part of the Sinister Six,
and Drew Goddard has got a great working relationship with Marvel. So
I mean, maybe they could take that idea and rework it into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I mean, it makes sense that they would eventually do Sinister Six, considering they cast this kid so young, and they're going to try to milk Spider-Man for all it's worth. So we got about, you know, they seem to be able to get like 7 movies in 10 years. We might get a Spider-Man 6. It's Spider-Man Sinister 6. Bam. There you go.
So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen with that. Because, like, you're right. It has tested a lot of the faith of the faithful with the three villains. And the history there with the Spider-Man universe, as we have so eloquently covered. It's just... I don't know, man. I don't know that there's anything that could bring me down off on that movie with John Francis Daly writing, with John Watts directing, with all the positive spin. I mean, the only negative thing that's come out is, you know, the reveal of Zendaya being Mary Jane Watson. But if there's nothing about the character of Mary Jane that inherently says, I am white, so I'm not... And it's Queens. It's a diverse place, so... Yeah. You know,
like, their big thing has been like, she doesn't have red hair. I'm like, look, I'm here to tell you, black people have red hair.
Yeah, and there is hair dye. And you know, she was more Dunst was more strawberry blonde by the time
it was all done. Yeah,
by the time the third movie came around, she was more strawberry blonde. So, and I've seen her work on the Disney Channel on the Undercover show. So I know that I know her style, I know her tone, and I think she'll do a great job at it. But I mean, it's just going to be interesting to see what they do with Homecoming and where it fits into the grand scheme, and you know how big Downey's role is, because we get Happy Hogan in there, and you know.
I'm hoping it's like he shows up as Tony once, he shows up as Iron Man once. Happy's with him with the Tony part, and we call it a day. I hope they don't actually like go fight anybody together.
Well, you kind of have to, because you know Downey's making 35 to 50 million on this. So you kind of need, if he's getting co-starring money, he needs to co-star.
That is right. He is getting a whole lot of money. But he doesn't have to. He just need, the whole reason, the whole thing with this is Spider-Man can make $1 billion by himself. He can make $1 billion by himself. You just put Iron Man in there to, like, he's the mouthwash. He's the mouthwash of the Amazing Spider-Man. Like, I'm still not sure it's Spider-Man. I've seen a whole lot of Spider-Man. Wait, Iron Man's in it? Okay. The people that are on the fence, they'll give it a pass, and they'll go see it. And it makes his $1 million, and yeah. They can fight somebody together, but it can't be like, he can't fight the Vulture with Iron Man. It's just, no. They can go beat up Shocker together and call it a day.
Or the Tinkerer.
Or the Tinkerer, yeah, well, yeah. But if he goes to the Tinkerer, it just seems like they fight the Vulture, but Iron Man can't fight the Vulture. And so Spider-Man needs
all to do. All he'd have to do is one little pulsar from his his arc reactor.
Yeah, no. He needs to go mind his own business.
So are we going to start a running bet on whether or not Pepper Potts' name will be mentioned in Spider-Man Homecoming?
It'll be mentioned.
It'll be mentioned.
Yeah,
it will be mentioned because right now that bar that those three young ladies, Jane Foster, Betty Ross, and Pepper Potts are sitting in is kind of hidden away.
We'll see here. So the Incredible Hulk, while it happened, a lot of people forget that it happened. They forget there's a girl in that. So it's easy not to say.
And Betty Liv Ross. Tyler's gotten older, so.
Yeah, and I mean, it's easier to say Betty Ross doesn't exist, even though her dad staring you in the face in Civil War. But you can kind of forget it. Jane Foster
has got to die in Thor Ragnarok. Because, like,
she could.
I mean, we've seen Thor running around with RIP on his arm, so.
Hey.
And you got to do something, considering that she said she's out, she's done with Marvel. And the last time we saw the two of them together, she was living with him in their flat in London until he apparently moved in with his homeboy in Australia.
I mean, you can knock her off. But Pepper is harder to get around because she's been in so many of these movies.
Heart and soul, baby. Heart and soul of the Iron Man universe. That's why it was such a devastating blow and so unlogical to have her not show up in Civil War.
Maybe this is just the comic side of me, because I'm like, I don't care, because I knew they were a thing, but by the time I started reading it, they weren't a thing. In fact, she married Happy, so, like, in my mind, it's always been like, well, all roads lead to Happy, so she can take this pissed off of Tony, but it's going to Happy, so I don't care. I don't care about this.
I care. I know you do. and Gwyneth Paltrow's agent cares. And Apple and Moses care.
They're all right.
All right, so let's move on from Marvel and DC, and let's talk about a couple of cursed movies. The Crow remake, been tried for like 15 years now. Devastating results, considering the last guy kind of died on set. So, your thoughts on the fact that there's an announcement that a Crow remake will start filming in January.
Much like I feel about James Cameron and his Avatar stuff,
it's a family saga, my friend. It's a family saga like The Godfather.
Yeah, he can say it all he wants. It's playing in his head. That's fine. Until they step foot in front of camera and, like, they roll. And at this point, it can't be like they turn the camera on. No, they got to be shooting for, like, a week before I believe it.
Instagram photos, anyone?
No. You got to show me some footage. Like, you got to... I need to see what you've seen, like, from the first week. I need to see all of it before I believe it. That's how I feel about Avatar, and that's how I feel about The Crow.
So you're not gonna take Zoe Saldana just in her blue makeup and her pajamas just running around somewhere?
No, not enough. It's not enough. And Crow, you got Jason Momoa. I don't know who the director is, but you're shooting in January. That's all well and good. The company, as far as I remember, was about to go bankrupt. I don't see how this still happens. But if you want to keep telling yourself January, go ahead.
Just don't expect any of the rest of us to actually believe.
I believe nothing until you shoot. You can have Jason Momoa
until you shoot.
Get up, shoot. That's what I didn't say that.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
Until you start production.
Yeah. Until you start that, like Jason Momoa can be all in like all in the get up. Like he can walk in my face, like in the crow get up, and their camera's like right around the corner. I'm like, until you click start, I don't believe nothing.
Well, I mean, we have gone through Luke Evans and about 8 other guys, Bradley Cooper,
Tom Hiddleston,
yeah,
somebody else I can't think of. I want to say Charlie Hunnam or something like that. I don't know.
Lot of dudes. So, Crow remake has to prove that it's actually in existence.
Yeah, you actually got to get up and start swinging before I believe.
All right. So, the G.I. Joe franchise is on hold until Dwayne The Rock Johnson can find time in his schedule to go back to making those.
That man is insane. The reason he's not doing this is because, let's see, he said on Twitter like last Thursday, from last Thursday until August of next year, he's shooting straight. And he said he's not taking any time off between freaking, it's a whole year. He's going a whole year straight. An entire year. The man is insane. I don't understand how he does it. He wakes up at 4:30 in the morning, and he shoots until like 2 in the morning, and he wakes up again off of 2 hours rest, and then he goes and gets jacked, and he's shooting stuff all this time. And it's not stuff where he's sitting at a desk. He's like running and jumping and shooting and all this stuff, and he's doing this for an entire year.
And calling out his co-stars for being pussy.
When you shoot for an entire year and do the things he does, well, goddamn it, if he says you are, then you are. What am I going to do? So, the man's insane. But
he's going to shoot Ballers, another season of Ballers. He's in production on Jumanji.
Yeah. But I don't know what comes after that. But between now
maybe and Rampage hits back on the schedule.
Maybe. And
maybe just, those two Journey to the Center of the Earth sequels that no one asked for.
No. I think he's past that. Like, I did that on the front end. It was on the front end of The Rock coming back. Now I was like, nah, I don't really need you. But G.I. Joe, they need him. Yeah. So I was like, I guess we ain't got nothing else. We'll just wait for you.
We'll wait for you. We're going to cross them over. I mean, just imagine The Rock and Tyrese together on screen the Joes and the Transformers.
Of all the things, that is the thing that I would actually be almost excited to see. I still have never seen the second G.I. Joe. The first one is terrible.
Second one's better. Although they do kill Duke. They do kill Duke in like the first 10 minutes.
They deserve to kill Duke because they should have just killed him in the cartoon years ago so Optimus could have lived. Because G.I. Joe wanted to push back, Optimus had to die. You know that whole story, yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. So forget Duke. I'm glad he's dead. But yeah, they crossed those over. I don't like the Transformers movies after the first one. G.I. Joe, I don't care. You cross them over and I'm like, I think it's going to be terrible, but I'm going to at least give you my money because I want to see this. It makes sense. Transformers has these random army dudes running around. G.I. Joe, random army dudes. These pieces fit. Just do it.
Unlike Rom Space Knight. Or King Arthur.
I'm done.
So, Lupita Nyong'o is out promoting a movie that she has coming out of TIFF. She was asked about Star Wars Episode 8 and said that she has not started her work yet. Production wrapped back in March. We saw photos of some CGI work that was being done on Maz Kanata through Rian Johnson's Twitter account, but she said she has not done any work with that yet. Your thoughts on the fact that Maz Kanata has yet to record her lines or start acting?
Well, I mean, she's in like 10 minutes of The Force Awakens. I can believe that she'll be in like 10 to 15 minutes again.
But she has the secrets of the universe.
Which is all the more reason why she can't be in the movie that long.
Right. She has the secrets of the universe. She knows where that lightsaber came from.
Yeah.
So long story. I'll tell you another time.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for that. Like, 2 movies from now. But, I mean, I'm not surprised. She's doing a lot of mocap stuff. Her stuff doesn't actually have to be on set when everybody else is. So, yeah, they're going to do reshoots on this because they do reshoots on everything. Her time might be scheduled during the reshoots. This is just normal. So, I'm not surprised at all, actually.
And she expressed optimism about Black Panther, so.
Yeah. only good things need to be said about Black Panther. Look, this one. Again, I can't stress enough. This is going to be the biggest all black movie
since ever. Shaft.
No, but Shaft is like yes, it's a big movie, but it's just like a black movie. While this is a black movie, this is like the biggest mainstream black movie ever. This movie is going to have the most money put into it with an all black cast, a black director, all this stuff. So, they kind of carry the torch. You can't. They
in Black History Month.
In Black History Month, Marvel has not messed up yet. This is not the one to start messing up on.
All right. So let's talk about a movie that was announced over the week, the last week. Both of us being professional wrestling fans, it was announced that there will be a Chris Benoit biopic that will not be financed by the WWE Films Division.
Surprise, surprise.
Your thoughts on Lexi Alexander being chosen and just the idea that a Chris Benoit biopic and revisiting that life and that legacy.
This is a tough one just because of the subject matter of it. For those that don't know, Chris Benoit was a wrestler.
Had CTE, and went a little nuts.
Yeah, one weekend he proceeded to...
After being drafted number one in the WWE.
It was like a few weeks before that. Yeah,
it was the week before. He was drafted by number one overall by SmackDown.
Yeah, and he had been wrestling for years. This was like really his prime time, like in the mainstream spotlight. But over the course
main evented WrestleMania 20 and 1.
Yeah, and nobody thought I remember that. And I was like, he won, and we all went nuts. But
Eddie Guerrero on the same night.
No, Eddie won it the month before. They just came out and did the celebration the night of. Eddie defended that night. But he killed his wife on like the Friday. His son on the Saturday.
And then himself
on Sunday. And when the WWE found out, they just found out that they all were dead. They didn't know the circumstances. And this is directly after an event where Vince McMahon had killed himself the week before. So the show starts... The
limousine had blown up.
He blew up in a limo. So the show starts with Vince coming out, saying that they're going off script. It's not good. It's not in good taste to do this now. And they went and had a
Chris Benoit
night.
Chris Benoit memorial show
that
is more difficult to find on YouTube than the Star Wars Christmas special.
The way this goes, it seems like either during the show or like right after that show, they were like somebody said, hey, Chris killed them and he killed himself. And because the next night, ECW was the following night. The next night, that show started by saying, pretty much saying, we're done with that dude. Like, no, like he does not exist. And for years, he did
not. He was blotted out, like blurred out in certain WWE videos.
Yeah, like they blur out the old WWF logos and certain things. There would just be a match, and there's just this blur in the corner because it's Chris.
It's just, like... Even the Owen Hart deal gets treated differently than the Chris Benoit deal.
Well, because that's their fault. I mean, it was a malfunction with their stuff, and Owen died in the ring, not doing anything, just doing his job, basically.
A job he didn't want to have to do.
Yeah, he
did not want to have to come down from the ceiling, and it didn't fit the character, really.
So, we had that's where we're at with Chris. So, it's a difficult subject to talk about, Chris, because... of the things surrounding it, but I'm interested to see how this movie is going to be done, because there's no way you can kind of skirt around this whole thing. Unless
you're going to do it the way that they did with Rourke and the Wrestler, where it's just a man slowly deteriorating from the effects of CTE, and they become more noticeable.
I think that's kind of the only way they can do it, because You're going to start this movie off with a character that most people are going to find not sympathetic, because they know how his story ends. So you have to make him sympathetic through it and then chronicle why he ended up like that.
Hard to watch him fly off the top rope and headbutt anybody after that.
I don't think I've really seen a match, like a real match, with him in it since all this happened. part of that is because WWE went way out of their way to make sure you cannot find anything.
Until the network.
Yeah, I've heard they've softened it since the network. But before that, it was like, no. Like, if he had a match, like, if you got a match with Chris Benoit, sorry. Like, Randy Orton's crowning match, yeah, you won the title. Ain't nobody ever going to see that. So it's going to be interesting how they handle it. The choice of Lexi to do it. Only thing I've seen of Lexi Alexander has been Punisher Warzone and like a couple episodes of The Arrow. So like
it's a not a brand name director for a project that I'm surprised even got financing.
Yeah. So it's gonna
and not to mention greenlit because the estates would have to be involved. So I mean
that is true
because you're dealing with the depiction of his wife and child. So. And then you not to mention the fact that you got to find somebody to cast in that in the role of Benoit.
It's a whole bunch of touchy stuff with this. So
I mean, and it's not like this was an event that happened in the 1920s or the 1950s. This is an event that's like within the last 10 years. So it's still very sobering. Still very, very real to a lot of people.
Yeah, because of the way it happened, it's like people that have memories of Chris Benoit, they're very specific, and they all have very specific opinions.
There are still wrestlers who are active who wrestled against Chris Benoit and who trained with Chris Benoit and are friends of Chris Benoit's. Jericho mainly among them.
Yes. Yeah.
And I can't believe that any of them believe that this is a good idea or wholly endorse this idea.
I would like to ask them, like, and Jericho's fairly active on Twitter, like, what do you think about this movie? I doubt he'll answer it, but that is a good point. I never thought of it like that. But yeah, there are people that are, like, it's so new that there are lots of people
that
have still
done it. The only thing that I can compare it to, we just passed the 15-year anniversary of 9/11. The only thing I can compare it to is how quick the turnaround was on United 93 by Paul Greengrass and World Trade Center by Oliver Stone. Like, those were within a year and a half of 9/11.
Yeah.
Like, I remember distinctly, and I own United 93, and I think it's of the two 9/11 movies, it was the better one. I remember watching United 93 in a theater full of people, and I remember when they cut the movie off, like, when they make the attack, they try to take the plane back, yada, yada, let's roll and all that. You could hear a pin drop in that theater. And it kind of almost felt like we were imposing on seeing something we shouldn't be seeing. You know, it was just a similar thing with The Passion of the Christ. It was a very intense, very personal viewing experience. And, you know, I can kind of understand how for the Benoit family and for those who knew Benoit, this would be something similar where it's like, how do you depict that life? How do you depict that person and separate the person from the actions and separate the person from the disease? And you know, it's just a very touchy thing. Like 9/11 at that point was still so visceral in everybody's mind that it was weird to be watching the events of Flight 93 be played out on screen. For a lot of people, Chris Benoit is still a very tangible person. They remember WrestleMania 20. They remember watching him against Jericho at WrestleMania 18. They remember all of these different things about Jericho, the Crippler Crossface, which is the name of the movie Crossface. They have visceral memories of him. It's not like he's a person who's been dead for 30 years. So it's going to be an interesting thing. I don't know what the financing is. I don't know how wide the release is going to be. I don't know what their aim is to try to be with this movie. If it's a TIFF or a Telluride or a Sundance, or if it's like a big Snowden type of just mainstream movie event, Sully.
Yeah.
So those are questions that I have more of, like, is it going to feel like we're watching something we really shouldn't be watching, you know?
Yeah. I agree with that last part. I don't know. It's I don't know when they're like going to actually start production. I wouldn't be surprised if this is one of those things that just.
And her name came. Off. Her name came up on several of the Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel yes. casting lists. So she has bona fides.
Mm-hmm. I see it. I know she can do like the you know all the physicality parts about that. It's just the.
How do you get around the story? How do you get around the personal aspects of that story? And how do you depict Vince? How do you depict Bischoff? How do you depict Russo? How do you depict, you know, Eddie and the influence that he had in his life?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's going to be... There's just so much there. I don't... Like, if this fell off, like, fell away from the face of this earth, I wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't be surprised if there was a lawsuit at some point by somebody trying to halt production.
Yeah. I might have to look into that, because it seems like something that would be happening, like, right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's different with Concussion, the Will Smith movie, because you're just dealing with a biopic of a doctor who has, you know, a history with the NFL and has this stance against that, you know, science proves that concussions are linked to CTE and football is a concussion sport and yada yada. There's not a bona fide villain. Even the NFL is not made out to be a bona fide, purposeful villain in that movie. You know, with Benoit, it's just kind of hard to depict him in any other way than a man struggling with the disease that he can't overcome.
Yeah. I don't know, man. This is... Just when I saw this, this whole production is going to be interesting to see if it actually happens. I'll be watching it just because I don't know how you do half of this thing, half of this stuff.
Yeah, well, I don't know how the Benoit family or how the estate of his wife and son have to be contacted because they're going to be in the they're going to be represented in the film.
Yeah.
So they have to give the okay for the film even to go ahead. So the fact they've hired a director, and I didn't see that there was a writer attached to the movie at all. So maybe this is just like a production company that has this idea that wants to hire a director and a writer to start fleshing out how they would do it. But if the movie's entitled Crossface, that would suggest to me that there is a script somewhere that at least a draft or a treatment of a Benoit story. Because, like, I don't even think you get away with doing the Benoit story as a TV movie, much less...
I don't know. They might be able to work around it that way. But it'd be hard either way.
Yeah. So so that'll about do it for this week's episode of the Movies on the Brain podcast. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow me on Twitter at BCW Tiger Fan
and at The Mesh Theory.
Thank you very much, and have a pleasant day.